Sam Brody is the Washington correspondent for MinnPost, and he was in Duluth last Saturday to cover the Congressional District 8 DFL convention. Sam Brody's back with us now on KAXC KBXC. Sam, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, of course. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, first of all, it was a very long day for everybody involved. Five candidates were there, all the DFLers that are running for Congressman Nolan's 8th District seat. It was Pfeiffer, Radinovich, Metza, Lee, and Kennedy. Give us a kind of an overall feel of the day.
Yeah, well, you had it right first. It was a pretty long day. Delegates started to gather at about 8 in the morning, and they didn't break for their banquet until about 8 that evening. So it was a really full slate of action. What made it so long was that there were 10 ballots for which delegates could vote on their preferred candidate to receive the DFL endorsement in this race. This is a critical race. It was before Congressman Nolan announced his retirement, and now it's even more crucial as Democrats have to decide who's going to pick up the party banner. And, you know, the high stakes of the race and some of the divisions in the party, which I'm sure we'll get to, contributed to the fact that this went for such a long time. You had a vocal contingent of supporters of Leah Pfeiffer, who had been in the race since October with the actual intent of challenging Nolan. She didn't jump in after he announced his retirement. You know, she had a lot of supporters in the room. And then the other four candidates also had some pretty vocal supporters, particularly Radinovich and Metza. Michelle Lee didn't as much. She was seen as going to the primary, and when she did not make it to the second ballot at the convention, she said in her speech that she'd be going on, which actually prompted some boos and heckling from the crowd. But basically, after the fourth ballot, it was between Radinovich and Pfeiffer. You need 60% of delegate support to get the endorsement. Pfeiffer came close on one ballot. She got 52%, but she didn't get any closer. Radinovich kept it up, and so there was just a several-hour stretch in which the delegates voted for the two candidates at basically the same rates. By the 10th ballot, the convention voted by a simple majority not to endorse. So it was 10 hours of a lot of debating, a lot of wheeling and dealing, but ultimately no endorsement.
So how did everybody feel when they left?
Not great, I'll say that. I was out in the hallway outside the ballroom filing my story and overheard lots of delegates and people milling around. And this isn't what people wanted. This ensures a primary. There was likely to be one before, given some of the nature of the candidates, but now this is going to be a four-candidate primary with the potential to divide Democrats in the run-up to the general election. You know, DFL Chair Ken Martin was talking to delegates before this and before they voted, and this is certainly something you say during an endorsement, but he said, we can't afford to be divided here. The Republicans have already coalesced behind their candidate, Pete Stauber, who's a member of the St. Louis County Board of Commissioners, and he's going to basically sit pretty until the general election and raise money and consolidate support while Democrats sort of have to duke it out. So people were exasperated by the day. They're not looking forward to the prospect of a primary ahead of this general election. And also the tone of the day, I mean, this is, you know, they call it the fight in eighth, and there's a reason for that. But there was some divisive rhetoric. There was some ill will in the group, certainly among supporters of Congressman Nolan, still are sort of cold towards Pfeiffer because she decided to challenge him while it still seemed as if he was going to run for re-election. And on a couple other issues like mining and immigration, some division there too. So it was a tough day for a lot of those involved.
You know, I talked to a Radinovich delegate who said from the get-go, she said it just didn't feel like a winning day. She just felt like it was going to be tough. They were going to struggle through the day.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, talking to people ahead of time, it did seem as if a lot of people believe that no endorsement would be a likely outcome just when you have so many candidates. And even as the candidates began to get eliminated from the ballot, you know, the divisions that have kind of persisted over the past few months, just, you know, it prevented somebody from being a consensus candidate. There were too many people who say, I can't support Leah Pfeiffer for, X, Y, or Z reason. And the same for Joe Radinovich. And so you saw, that one of them was only able to break 50% support one time. I think it's worth noting as well that Congressman Nolan made a late-in-the-game endorsement. He was not physically there at the convention, but near the end, he called into the Radinovich camp and indicated that he would be endorsing Radinovich, and that didn't really seem to move the needle one way or the other. It certainly didn't put Radinovich over 50% or nowhere even close to the 60% he would have needed to win. And then when the no endorsement decision was reached by the convention, Nolan's camp rescinded the endorsement of Radinovich, and the congressman said he would wait to see how the primary shook out before endorsing anyone further. So that kind of muddled the picture even more, if that was possible.
Can you explain to us why the Michelle Lee response of not giving up was, received so poorly?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that is due to the respect that a lot of folks in the room have for the endorsement process. And across the state, the sway and the influence of the endorsement has sort of been weakening over the years, and it's not guaranteed that if you win the endorsement that you'll go on to win a primary. But, the endorsement is respected. And in the 8th District, where there's people in that room at the DFL convention who've been involved in DFL politics for decades, maybe their families have been for generations, and the endorsement is still a somewhat sacred thing. So to have a candidate come to the convention, get eliminated on the first ballot and then sort of say that they're going to move on to a primary, to a lot of people just kind of flouts the process and flouts the customs and way that politics are done. And the people who felt that way certainly made themselves known.
We're talking to Sam Brody from MinnPost about last weekend's 8th District DFL convention in Duluth. Do you think, this is insiders working towards, they were hoping for an endorsement, but in terms of Michelle Lee, do you think she's got the name recognition from all her years on local TV? So she's thinking voters are going to go more forward her instead of the DFL insiders?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the endorsement in the primary are two different ballgames. And, Michelle Lee is a political newcomer. And, she was on TV for a really, really long time in the Duluth market. And a lot of folks in the district probably know who she is. And that gives her sort of a built-in advantage over some of the other candidates who remain in the race who, the 8th is a big district. But, Jason Metza has strong support on the Iron Range. That's where his state house district is. Radinovich represented a state house district out near Brainerd, where Congressman Nolan is from. Kirsten Kennedy is the mayor of North Branch, down at the southern end of the district. Lee probably has the biggest geographic span in terms of people who probably know who she is. The primary electorate, it's still people who are pretty passionate about politics. It's not the activist core. But the people who show up for a primary are going to typically be pretty plugged in. So I think Lee bet that the endorsement was going to be a tough lift, especially having gotten to the race somewhat late. And we'll see what happens. It's going to be a really interesting primary. It's not until August. So the candidates have a lot of time. And something I've noted in my coverage is that the candidates agree on a lot of really key issues. They're all for single-payer health care, for example. So they're going to look for places to distinguish themselves from one another, and those could be the issues that could make the primary into the sort of contentious battle that some party insiders have feared.
You've talked about some of the dramatic moments of this day in Duluth last Saturday. Can you tell us a little bit more about what happened with Leah Pfeiffer and the DFL Latino Caucus and what went down?
Yeah, absolutely. That did produce some of the most dramatic moments of the day. So Leah Pfeiffer she formerly worked for the FBI, but she also worked for the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, which is the agency tasked with deporting undocumented immigrants. Now, Leah Pfeiffer has addressed this head on before. She actually wrote an op-ed in our publication, MinnPost, sort of detailing her time at ICE and sort of defending the people who work there and pushing back on the notion that they're sort of these, to use her words, jackbooted thugs who are sort of unfeeling and deport people left and right. And that really did not sit well with Latino members of the DFL. A few from Minneapolis came up to the convention to voice their concerns about Pfeiffer's past employment at ICE and to, you know, protest her candidacy. There were a couple moments where a representative tried to made a motion to try and address the convention to speak on that. The first time that that came up, that was denied, which a lot of delegates told me was not a great look for the DFL. Ultimately, they were recognized to speak, but Pfeiffer was also recognized to speak after them, sort of setting up her chance to give a rebuttal. But the delegate from the Latino caucus basically said, you know, we can't support somebody who has had a hand in deporting immigrants. That's not what we're about, and we're not going to be able to support that. Pfeiffer responded for a little bit in Spanish. She defended her time there, saying that she was an advocate for people who didn't have advocates and worked mainly as a translator and advocate. And she said she'd, you know, promised to listen. But still, that did not sit well with some folks in the room. But, you know, there's an inside baseball element of it, too. Some Pfeiffer supporters believe that, you know, this was set up by the Radinovich crowd to sort of smear Pfeiffer. I've heard a lot of that on social media in recent days, that this was sort of a play from the establishment DFL. So it's an issue that sort of gets at some of the tensions that are underlying all this, which is, what is the role of the establishment in this primary, and are outsider candidates sort of being discouraged? And that dynamic was certainly at play on Saturday.
What did you see in terms of the delegates there? Because that certainly was, I talked to some of the newer people. This is maybe one of their first or second times that they've even been involved in politics going as a delegate. Some said they felt really welcomed as a younger person, and some said they didn't. They talked about the same thing you just mentioned there, the establishment. What'd you see?
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, there were a lot of young people in the room, a lot of college students. And, you know, I talked to a lot of them, and they were really passionate about the process. They were happy to be there and sort of viewed their role as important to sort of provide fresh perspectives and new voices to a party that, especially in this region, has sort of been dominated by an old guard of really practiced and veteran activists and politicians. And most of them overwhelmingly supported Leah Pfeiffer, who, you know, she was endorsed by Our Revolution in Duluth, which is sort of the branch of the Bernie Sanders movement. And, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I think it's important to note Leah Pfeiffer dropped out of the race yesterday and said she couldn't continue her campaign. She really made a strong play for the endorsement, so having not gotten it, she thought she didn't have a path. But it'll be interesting to see if these young people feel alienated from the process now that their sort of candidate that they like, this progressive outsider, is, you know, now that she's out, it'll be interesting to see what they make of the process. You know, it's tired, but this Bernie and Hillary 2016 primary dynamic has really become the backdrop for a lot of races around the country, where you have a candidate who is seen as being an insider and part of the establishment, and then a candidate who is not. And the extent to which those 2016 animosities and tensions will animate the race in the 8th will be really interesting.
Sam, you cover Minnesota politics from Washington. Why is District 8 being watched on a national level?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the 8th district really is a top priority for both parties. This has been a really, really competitive seat for the last couple cycles, which is interesting. You know, for longtime residents, Jim Oberstar, a Democrat, held this district for decades. But since 2014, this has been among the most expensive House races in the entire country. And Republicans believe that it is turning red. 2016, Donald Trump won the 8th district by 15 points, even as Rick Nolan won by about 1%. And they see this as one of their best pickup opportunities in the entire country. They believe that, you know, these Democrats in the 8th are believing that the Democratic Party is no longer in tune with what their their needs are and what their priorities are, and they think they'll turn to Republicans. So Republicans are gonna spend a lot of money here. They like their candidate, Pete Stauber. And in a year where people are talking about a blue wave and potentially Democrats taking control of the House, the 8th is one of the few bright spots for Republicans where they could actually pick up a seat. I just read yesterday that a top Republican super PAC led by Paul Ryan, they are spending up to close to $3 million they've reserved in ad time, hammering whoever the Democratic candidate in this race is going to be. So that should tell you a lot about how important the Republicans view this, and how intense this is going to be through November, and how many attack ads that folks are going to see on their TVs through November.
Do you think the Lea Pfeiffer delegates, Lea Pfeiffer supporters, will go towards the independent candidate? We haven't mentioned Skip Sandman much here.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible in that sort of, I think it depends on who the DFL candidate is. Lea Pfeiffer's candidacy in large part was animated over opposition to Congressman Nolan's stances on copper nickel mining and sort of the governmental process surrounding that kind of mining, and was sort of embraced by a lot of environmentalists. Now that she's out of the race, I think her supporters will be looking to see, who wins. Michelle Lee shares Pfeiffer's stances on mining, so if she is the eventual nominee, I doubt a lot of her supporters will go to Skip Sandman, who's also a very pro-environment candidate. However, if it's somebody like Joe Radinovich or Jason Metza, I had Lea Pfeiffer delegates tell me that, they wouldn't be able to support either of those guys, given that they are sort of friendlier to mining than Pfeiffer or Lee was. So I think it remains to be seen, but that's a real fear among Democrats and something that I've heard certainly in D.C. as well, that this division over mining could add some juice to the third party candidate, Skip Sandman. And this race for the last few cycles has been decided by 2% or less. So if a third-party candidate even picks up 1% or 2% more, that could make all the difference in a race like this.
Well, and it's a good time if people have never been involved in the political process to get involved, if that is such a close race. Whatever side you're on, whatever your candidate might be. We did hear from someone who said that there were lots of newbies to the political process who are in support of Joe Radinovich and were there and had a really interesting time and learned a lot at the convention as well. So we'll continue to read your stories. That's Sam Brody. He covers Minnesota politics in Washington at minpost.com. Sam, thanks for taking time for us today.
Of course. Thank you.
You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show. Let us know what you think if you were involved in that convention, if you're in support of the independent candidate, Skip Sandman, or Pete Stauber, the Republican candidate. We'd love to hear from you. Comments at kaxe.org.